This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
It is Carrie Hodder filling in for Linda Swain on Target St. John's today. I hope you're having a wonderful afternoon. On the line with me now, she's no stranger to the airwaves here at VOCM. Dr. Lynette Powell is the new president of the Newfoundland and Labrador Medical Association. We are reaching her in her office in Grand Falls, Windsor today. Good afternoon, Dr. Powell. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me again, Carrie.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And, of course, you guys had a news conference earlier this week announcing that your contract negotiations with the province will resume on Monday. I guess not resume. You guys haven't had contract negotiations since 2013, and you've been without a contract since 2017. Negotiations with our doctors in this province really impact everybody in the province. What do you hope for on Monday?
I mean, I guess from our point of view, we really just want to see, we want to see the government look at ways to kind of help our primary healthcare system here in Newfoundland evolve in a positive way. It's no surprise to anybody listening or to yourself that we've been talking for a long time about the deficits in family medicine in the province and in primary care. It really needs some, big overhauls and some major changes. And we know investment in primary care is ultimately going to decrease costs of the system overall. So one of our big negotiating points is really to kind of, ask the government to take a serious look at how we can fix some of these major issues in family medicine, which is, family medicine is synonymous with primary care in a lot of ways.
I'm wondering, why did it take so long to get to the negotiating table? You've been without a contract for 3 years.
That's a good question, and I guess maybe one that, would be better put to the government. We've been ready to negotiate for quite a long time. There's been a lot of confusion over the last year or two about who's been responsible for the negotiation. Is it the Minister of Finance? Is it the Minister of Health? I'm hoping that the government finally finds themselves in a place where they have some of that stuff sorted out. We're going into this certainly with a very positive attitude. And we've heard from the government that some of the changes that we think need to happen in the system are also the page that they're on. So I think that's probably the short answer to that.
And this fall, you kind of went on a virtual tour across the province speaking with some of your members. What have they told you that they want out of these negotiations?
I guess the points we talked about are really, our negotiating points have been informed by our membership. And, the feedback we get from them really is a reflection of what's going on in the healthcare system across the province. Recruitment and retention in rural areas is really, really critical right now. We're probably in, there's a lot of reasons why, but we're probably in one of the worst positions we've been in many years from a recruitment and retention point of view, just because of the uncompetitiveness of our contract and the fact that a lot of the avenues that we once used for bringing doctors to Newfoundland and Labrador have been, to some extent shut down. So what I heard from, a lot of rural sites was that people were really feeling the strain very low volumes of physicians in the communities, which meant high call volume. What that means if you're a doctor in a small town is that you're always putting out fires. You move from crises to crises, and you can never really do the things that need to be done to keep your patients happy. You just put out the fires. So we heard a lot about that. We heard a lot about physicians feeling burned out. I guess since COVID, one thing that's happened, which I know communities would be able to recognize, is it's been very difficult to get local physicians in from outside of the province. And a lot of physicians in our rural communities, often have family in Ontario. They have not been able to leave to visit family because of lack of coverage or because of quarantine rules. A lot of physicians are really feeling the burn this year from the lack of support from other, from being short-staffed. as well as just, you know, it's been stressful for every single one of us going through this. We've been very lucky. Our case numbers have been very low, but certainly all of us have seen a significant change in our workflow. We've seen a change in how we do business. And as everybody knows, change is hard. It's hard for every single one of us, and doctors are no different.
And other provinces also have large rural populations as well. Have you spoke to any other doctors in other parts of Canada, maybe other presidents of medical associations, to see how they deal with recruitment and retention in rural areas?
So certainly. I mean, we regularly meet with our provincial counterparts. I think in October, I met with the presidents of the other medical associations. So, you know, we regularly kind of have our eye to what's happening across the country. One thing I will say is that primary care and family medicine, the problems we have here in Newfoundland and Labrador are not exclusive to our province. There's certainly issues across the country. We're finding that, you know, less medical students choose family medicine as a route, and you know, often many will go into specialties. So, you know, the lack of community doctors and family physicians is not just an issue here. Other provinces have looked at other funding models, obviously, and that's been hugely beneficial. But I wouldn't say there's any province in Canada that, you know, entirely has this figured out, and many of them have issues with staffing their rural sites. Certainly those that have put some time and energy into fixing the models of care in rural communities have certainly been more successful.
What would the starting salary be, for instance, for a general practitioner, a family doctor here in Newfoundland and Labrador as compared to other parts of the country? Is it really that big of a difference?
So, you know, that's a hard question, right? Because in Newfoundland and Labrador, you know, there's not a lot of the doctors that you see in the community are actually salaried doctors, right? Most of them, myself included, would work on a fee-for-service model, which means when you sit in front of the doctor gets paid for that visit. Or, you know, since, you know, the pandemic, if you see the doctor virtually, the doctor gets paid for that visit. On the same note, that means that the office you sit in and the staff that you see when you come in and all the things that, you know, the medical equipment, those things are all, it's not a provincial, the government doesn't own that stuff. That's the doctors who actually own those. So, you know, in a way, I guess we're small business owners in a public system. So the starting salaries don't, you know, there are salaried family doctors for sure in Newfoundland and Labrador, but they're not the doctors that are going into an office and seeing their doctors that maybe work in the hospital. And I think, you know, in terms of, like, you know, billing, I mean, that's something that's anyone in the public can see that's been released by the government. I always tell people, when you look at those numbers, remember that these doctors are paying their staff and their clinic space from those billings, right?
And how has virtual medicine been going so far amidst COVID-19? I mean, you know, it's been talked about for years and years. It might be a solution to many problems here in Newfoundland and Labrador. And now it's kind of been forced upon us. I've had several virtual appointments with my own doctor since March. How is it going? And do you think that it is the way of the future?
Oh, my goodness. It's certainly been an interesting 6 months for us transitioning to that type of model of care. Many of us have believed for a long time that virtual care has a significant role, particularly with the reality of Newfoundland and the fact that there's so many people who have difficulty and have a drive to sit in front of a doctor, maybe for something as little as, you know, just getting their medications renewed. So it makes a lot of sense from that point of view. I think, you know, we have to do some work as a province at figuring out, you know, can we do more, you know, can we do less telephone, more video? A lot of that stuff that, you know, I've encountered, you know, in my own practice is that, you know, there's often difficulties with connecting to people's home on video because some of the, you know, the rural communities don't necessarily have good internet access. So we certainly have some work to do in trying to make the virtual care as optimal as possible. But, you know, my patients have you know, had nothing but positive feedback about virtual care. It's not all virtual, of course. I mean, I did a clinic here this morning, and I probably saw about two-thirds of my patients in person and one-third by virtual today. And that differs day to day, but I think most of us would say the same thing. So we're all doing a little bit of both, and the patients do, you know, do appreciate the fact that they don't always have to get in their car to come into the office to get an answer from me.
Well, that's what I really liked about it, was the fact that, oh, my doctor's calling, I'm at work, I can just duck into my own office for 10 minutes and have a conversation, and it doesn't, you know, I didn't have to tell everybody at the station, I have a doctor's appointment, I have to leave for an hour and a half, because goodness only knows how long you're going to have to wait in the doctor's office for, that kind of thing. That's why I really liked it, just for the convenience, and then, you know, when the doctor says maybe we need to see you face-to-face, so then we do that as well. It's kind of nice to have that pre-appointment before an actual appointment, because sometimes you don't actually need an appointment.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome and interesting on that point of view, and you know, it's been really funny to me. It's been kind of in this job, you often as a family doctor, like I always tell people, I feel very privileged to be, you know, to have knowledge about people's lives, and I feel, you know, I'm privileged that people, you know, share things with us because of part of their medical treatment. But there's also over the course of your career, you have lots of stories. And the big story out of virtual care is that, you know, most doctors are always a little bit behind schedule, myself included. You might not necessarily get the phone call exactly when you were expecting it. So it's always funny to hear where people are when I call them. So that's been a little bit of a challenge. Sometimes I'll catch people in the Dollarama, or I'll catch somebody in the bathroom, or I'll catch them, I caught one guy in the middle of the woods moose hunting. So that's been some of the kind of the stories that come out, and it always gives me a chuckle.
I bet, you know, if it wasn't for doctor-patient confidentiality, I'd tell you, I'd get you to tell me some of those oversharing incidents on the air, because I'm sure there's some funny ones. But anyways, we are talking about a serious topic, of course. The Newfoundland and Labrador Medical Association, their contract talks start up again on Monday, and we have our guest on the air, Dr. Lynette Powell. She is the president of the Newfoundland and Labrador Medical Association. It's Carrie Hodder in for Linda Swain on Target St. John's, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
Carrie Hodder filling in for Linda Swain today on Target St. John's. And our guest today is Dr. Lynette Powell, president of the Newfoundland and Labrador Medical Association. She joins us live by phone in Grand Falls, Windsor. Thank you once again, Dr. Powell, for joining us on the air. I know you're a very busy person today. And one thing that is a pretty hot topic when it comes to the medical community here in Newfoundland and Labrador, or in Canada, I guess, really, is new licensing requirements for international medical graduates, IMGs they're called. And while they're good, they could have a negative impact on recruitment in rural Newfoundland and Labrador. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. So that's definitely something that's, you know, been on our radar, and I know it's on the radar of the government as well. Our college, our regulatory colleges across Canada have been trying to standardize the way that doctors are licensed, so that, you know, a doctor working anywhere in Canada looks pretty much the same from a point of view of their credentials. So that's a change for us. There used to be a time when the credentials were slightly different across the country. What that meant was that Newfoundland and Labrador was able to often attract international medical graduates here. Many of them would do some training when they came to Newfoundland and Labrador. There was a program here where they trained with local physicians, and that allowed them to be able to achieve a license here in Newfoundland and Labrador. And work. And traditionally, over the last, ever since I can remember, those physicians have been a large part of our physician workforce here, and many of them have played very significant roles in our medical system. They've been approximately about 40% of our physician workforce, actually, over the years. There is a cohort of those physicians who would often, because, you know, they had family obligations elsewhere, would work in Newfoundland and Labrador, many times in our rural communities, and they would work there for 2, 3, 4 years, and then they would often transition to a practice in Ontario when they were able to achieve the qualifications to be able to do that. So that's how that's worked here for many, many years. And like I said, in the last year or two, these qualifications have become, you know, we've been trying to standardize them more nationally. And, you know, that's a good thing from a point of view of us trying to make sure that we have the same quality doctor everywhere in the country, and everybody's qualifications are, you know, where they should be to be able to practice safe medicine. So we support the fact that the colleges have taken these steps. However, it succeeded in making Newfoundland and Labrador a less attractive option for many of these people who may be coming from other countries. They can actually now work in British Columbia, or they can work in Alberta, or they can work in Ontario with pretty much the same qualifications as they would have had before to work in Newfoundland. So the choice doesn't matter now. They can work anywhere because the qualifications are similar. Some provinces support that in different ways. In every case, there's always an orientation to the Canadian medical system, and there's always some degree of assessment that comes with doctors coming from other countries. And that's more standard now across the entire country. And some provinces are supporting these international medical graduates more in being able to come to their provinces. But it's really meant that for Newfoundland and Labrador, we've kind of lost an edge in terms of recruiting from that pool of doctors, which for many of our rural communities is going to be a real loss because traditionally these doctors have provided enormous amounts of service to many of these communities.
So do they have to do sort of like on-the-job training in order to get up to par with doctors in Canada, or do they have to take courses at MUN? I mean, we're so lucky to have a medical school right here in Newfoundland and Labrador in the metro area. How does that work?
So, in the past, they would do training, actually. There was a program called CSAC, and that program meant that they would be placed for 6 to 12 months, depending, with physicians around the province, and they would do training with those physicians. Now what happens is when they come to Newfoundland and Labrador, it's called a practice readiness program, and that has actually been developed in conjunction with Memorial University. But that means that these doctors they have to meet qualifications before they can come to Newfoundland and Labrador. And when they get here, they are mentored in their practice by
Dr. Powell, I'm going to get you to hold on there for 1 second. I'm going to get you to stay still a little bit more when you're on the phone, because every once in a while you kind of get drowned out, which is often the case with cell phones, unfortunately. And the situation that we're in with COVID-19, pretty much all of our guests are on the phone right now. So go ahead. Sorry for cutting you off there. Just wanted to get you to stay a little bit more still.
No, that's okay. Sorry about that. A lot of these physicians coming to Newfoundland and Labrador will come directly into medical practice because we have assessed their qualifications and know that they meet a minimum standard. When they're here for their first months of practice, they will actually be mentored by local physicians who will actually kind of assess their practice readiness to work in Newfoundland and Labrador. So it's a little bit different.
So in your news conference on Wednesday, you mentioned that we gained 43 new family doctors here in Newfoundland and Labrador last year, but then we lost 45. So where did the new doctors come from, and where did the 45 that we lost go?
So that's a good question. I think, we still do on a year-to-year basis. We do manage to retain some of our MUN graduates. That number fluctuates from anywhere from 12 to 20 per year. Memorial University trains about 35 family medicine graduates per year. So we're somewhere in, the 40 to 60% range year over year in keeping our MUN graduates here. But we're actually at the tail end of this old program as well, this old CSAT program. So there still are a few doctors who are coming through this old program who are still here, who have still recently come to Newfoundland and Labrador. And, of course, there's always a little bit of in-migration of physicians here from other provinces. My own brother and sister-in-law moved back from Ontario last year because they wanted to come home. So you always get a few people who drift back to the province for various reasons, and we're very thankful for that, obviously.
Is there any incentives for new graduates from Memorial University to stay in Newfoundland and Labrador in practice?
So that's been a little bit of an issue that we have come up against in the last few years for sure. There used to be signing bonuses for a lot of these new graduates who would come and work in Newfoundland and Labrador. Over the last couple of years, those have essentially dried up, and there's no money now available for the signing bonuses. So it is more difficult now to entice young graduates. There are still some government programs, of which some of them I'm not super familiar. For the most part, it's been very difficult to compete with our counterparts in Atlantic Canada and elsewhere in Canada who do have, more progressive signing bonus systems.
So if we want to keep them, what do we do? I mean, I know that you think that there's a need for 60 additional full-time family doctors right now in Newfoundland and Labrador, and then 20 more per year over the next 9 years. That's a big number.
It is, and it's a complicated problem, obviously, right? I think from our point of view, you certainly, we need to be competitive. Our goal has always been to be competitive with the rest of Atlantic Canada, acknowledging that when you're looking at a physician workforce, it's a highly mobile workforce. So obviously, physicians can go anywhere in Canada and often do. Our standpoint has always been that we should at least be competitive with Atlantic Canada so that we're not losing our doctors, just the other side of the ferry, right, to Nova Scotia and those provinces. So that would certainly be useful. We hear from a lot of medical students and residents that they've never really been approached by the province to stay here. There doesn't seem to be a lot of planning of saying, okay, this person is 4 years away from working. So how do we make sure that this person wants to stay here in 4 years' time? So that hasn't really been happening. So, they're being approached by other places where this does happen. So it's not hard to see why people may decide that, the grass is greener in the Annapolis Valley. So I think we really need to be more proactive in starting from the beginning of medical school training in, letting these students know just how much we do want them to stay here and how much we value them staying here. The other piece of it is that, we need to make sure that the family doctors that are staying in Newfoundland and Labrador are actually doing, are actually working in primary care. Because when you look at the numbers of family physicians in the province, it's easy to be confused a little bit by it sometimes, because there's many family doctors who don't actually work in family medicine. There's lots of places where you'll find a family doctor. They may be working in the hospital taking care of inpatients. They may be working in the emergency room. They may be working in oncology. There's lots of jobs that family doctors do that don't involve family doctors being in community practice. So we really need to make models of care that do encourage our family physicians to be in community practices and provide continuous long-term care for patients of Newfoundland and Labrador who desperately, desperately want and need to have primary care providers.
Would there be more stress involved in being a primary care doctor, do you think, as opposed to going in and doing a specialty? I mean, I'm assuming that there's more money attached when you do a specialty, so that could be a reason why people, move away from primary care. But is stress also a factor?
Certainly we're, primary care is an interesting group because most of us that do work in the community have to come into practice and become, small business owners, which I don't think any of us envisioned when we were doing our training. We just wanted to help people and we wanted to, take care of our fellow citizens. So I think the whole model of fee-for-service, the model of, being in the community, running a business, those things are certainly deterrents for a lot of young graduates when they look at their specialty choice. Family medicine, I love family medicine. I'm, 20 years into family medicine. I wouldn't have chosen anything else. I always say I'm privileged that people confide in me and that I get to be part of people's lives. So, you know, those parts of family medicine are the parts that bring medical students to family medicine, because it is a really, it's a very privilege and it's a great job. Unfortunately, some of the warts that come along with it, which are partially related to the fee-for-service system we work in, have made it a less desirable career and maybe a more difficult road to take than some of the other specialty areas.
Right. I want to give a shout out to my family doctor, Dr. Sheila McGraw, because she's literally like part of my family. She's been my doctor, I think, since probably grade 3 and, you know, takes care of my parents and my siblings and stuff. So they really do become part of the family. We're going to take another quick break here. Dr. Powell, stay tuned. We are speaking with Dr. Lynette Powell from the Newfoundland and Labrador Medical Association, and we'll be back with more after this. I'm Carrie Hotter filling in for Linda Swain on Target.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCN.
It's Carrie Hotter filling in for Linda Swain today on Target St. John's, having a great chat with Dr. Lynette Powell, the president of the Newfoundland and Labrador Medical Association. Dr. Powell, I was just mentioning my family doctor has been my doctor since like grade 3. She was right out of med school. And I'm thinking, oh no, she's probably set to retire pretty soon. And I'm assuming that a lot of people in Newfoundland and Labrador are in the same boat with our doctors are aging right along with the rest of us.
Yeah, no, and that's a great point, Carrie, because we actually pulled the numbers last week to look at that. And, I mean, the average age of a family doctor in Newfoundland and Labrador right now is 48 years old. I won't tell you where I fall on that, but pretty close to that number. And, you know, when you look at it, about 30% of our family doctors are over the age of 55. And we even have like 10% of our family doctors who are over the age of 65. And actually, a lot of those are in their 70s and 80s. And, you know, family medicine back, 30 years ago was a very different, place to work. And, you know, a lot of the older physicians, out of necessity and because of, you know, shortages and just the way that, you know, the practices were, many of them had very, very large patient loads. So, you know, you were looking at people with like, you know, 3,000-4,000 patients, which, you know, the recommendation nationally right now from our college is that one family doctor in the office 5 days a week should be able to handle about 1,250 patients. So you can see that these numbers are huge. So what it means to me is that, you know, if one of these doctors retires with a very large practice that's 3,000 or 4,000 patients, then it's probably going to take 2 or 3 doctors to really come in and replace that doctor, you know, working, you know, for most young doctors, that's the way they're going to, you know, want to be replaced, right? So it's, you know, the days of like people taking over whole practices has long gone. I mean, you see that very infrequently now. And so what happens when doctors retire is that in a lot of cases, the patients become orphaned and they just kind of have to float around in the system until they're able to, you know, lock into somebody opening a practice. So it's very, very, very stressful for patients. I know when I took on this job, a lot of my practice were, you know, I'd get questions every day. Are you giving up your practice? Are you going to keep working? What's going to happen to us? And, you know, people were very relieved to hear that, you know, I was still going to be around and that I was going to try my best to keep doing as you know, as much as I could. But, you know, that's a constant fear that I think patients have. And when you move into rural areas, I think it's even more because people are used to seeing so much turnover their family physicians. There's a constant nagging fear that the person that you've been seeing and the person you trust is going to leave. And that's particularly difficult for really vulnerable patients who have a lot of medical issues, who are on medications that they, you know, find difficult to get, you know, other doctors to prescribe. So, you know, it's a real fear for patients, and it breaks my heart, really, when I talk to people and do shifts in clinics where I talk to patients who don't have family doctors, because, you know, I completely understand how stressful it is to be in that situation.
And to have to go into a different doctor every time you go to a doctor and explain your whole history and stuff, it's not an easy thing to go through, I wouldn't imagine. We've been talking a lot about family doctors and stuff, but what about when it comes to specialists in Newfoundland and Labrador? How are we doing with recruiting and retaining specialists here?
you know, I guess that varies depending on the specialty area, you know, we talk about. You know, one of our big mantras is still, you know, with all services, we need to make sure that we're competitive with the rest of Canada to be able to keep people here. Because certainly, as you know, you get into more subspecialized subspecialists, there's even less of them. And, you know, keeping them means that we have to have a competitive environment here. But, you know, we've heard a lot, particularly in a lot of the rural settings, that some of the general specialists, like internal medicine specialists, those are the people who take care of you, showed up with a heart attack or if you were in the intensive care unit, psychiatrists, pediatricians, those are some groups that, you know, we're having some real difficulty in filling gaps in the system, particularly in rural areas.
And how are we doing when it comes to wait lists to get in and see these specialists and stuff? I mean, I guess now it's a little bit different because of COVID-19, so the wait list is even longer. But, you know, we've always been talking about over the last few decades about getting the wait times down to something more manageable. Has that happened?
So, you know, certainly the province is putting a lot of effort into managing some of our wait lists. I mean, you know, when we look at things like colonoscopies, endoscopies, orthopedic surgeries, there's certainly been a national push to standardize those wait lists. I think sometimes we lose in the mix that there are lots of other wait lists that we don't necessarily monitor. I mean, you know, as an example, for us, you know, there still is quite a wait to get patients seen by psychiatry, and that's a result of the fact that, you know, those services are understaffed. Another area that I would point out as a rural family doctor is, you know, rheumatology. We've been lucky to have a few new rheumatologists in Newfoundland and Labrador in the last few years, but certainly, I mean, you know, there's still quite significant wait lists to see some of these specialists who are very busy, and for the most part, these are specialists that have to continuously see the same patients over because these illnesses are chronic illnesses. So, you know, there's still lots of work to do, and you know, I always tell patients that, you know, it's really important to have a consistent primary care provider when you're waiting in queues for all these wait lists, because your primary care provider is often the person who's trying to manage things as it goes and is the person who's going to be able to tell you, okay, this is serious enough now that we're going to have to find a way to get you seen sooner, right? So you need that advocate for sure.
Absolutely. And I imagine that the wait times and just, you know, the fact that these specialists or psychiatrists realize that the wait list get in to see them are super long. I would imagine that attributes to the burnout because, like you say, you get into the medical field in order to help people and to know that there's, like, you know, a bottleneck to get in to see these people. It must be stressful on the doctors as well.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, everybody, you know, everybody wants to be able to, you know, none of us want to have patients waiting. It's very stressful for specialists to know they have patients waiting on their wait lists. And, you know, we've done some things over the last few years with the NLMA. You know, there's an e-consult program where, you know, as a family doctor, I can ask for a opinion where I submit information to certain specialists and get an opinion back so that I can, you know, tie over the management of that patient until they can be seen more definitively. So we've certainly made some strides in helping family doctors manage some of these more complex cases. But, you know, I often say to people that, you know, many days I feel like my clinic is an internal medicine clinic or a psychiatry clinic. The complexity of patients that I see on a day-to-day basis sometimes, you know, makes my head spin. But, you know, we have to do that because we have to make sure that, you know, patients are able to, we're able to keep them as well as we possibly can until they can be seen by somebody who can help us out more.
We're going to take another quick break here on Target. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Lynette Powell from the Newfoundland and Labrador Medical Association. Keep in mind, we are going to end just a little bit early because we are going into the COVID update coming up at 2 o'clock today. So we'll go into news with Jolene just a little bit early, and we'll be back with more with Dr. Lynette Powell from the NLMA next.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
It is Carrie filling in for Linda Swain today on Target. We're speaking with Dr. Lynette Powell Powell, the president of the Newfoundland and Labrador Medical Association. Their contract negotiations begin on Monday. They haven't had contract negotiations since 2013, if you can believe that. And I guess, you know, it is a new world with COVID-19, Dr. Powell. Is there anything on your wish list for your contract negotiations that wasn't there before we had a pandemic?
Not really for our wish list. I mean, I think it's reiterated to us the importance of being adequately staffed in primary care, for sure, and making sure that we have enough physicians to be able to take care of patients in the community. So that means family doctors. So I guess, you know, it's just kind of confirmed our position that, you know, we definitely need to work on that in Newfoundland and Labrador.
And we've got the COVID update coming up, of course, with the Premier, Dr. Janice Fitzgerald, Dr. John Hagee as well. How do you feel as a physician knowing that, you know, the people in charge of how we deal with this pandemic in Newfoundland and Labrador are all medical doctors?
So I guess, you know, I would hope that whoever's in these positions is going to, you know, act in the best interest of our population and is going to make their decisions based on the best possible evidence. I know all three of those individuals, and I have faith that they are acting in our best interest and are basing their decisions on the best evidence. So, I would hope, again, whoever's in that job is going to be doing stuff in a way that is transparent and evidence-based. And so far, that's what I've seen, I believe.
What grade would you give them so far?
We've done pretty well here in Newfoundland and Labrador. I have this conversation with patients every day when they come in and tell me how grateful they are that they can, live a relatively normal life in a relatively abnormal world right now. I remind people every day, though, as Dr. Fitzgerald does, that, they can only do so much and we all have to do our part. And it's still, you know, exquisitely important that every single one of us, tries our very best. To follow the public health guidelines and social distance and wear our masks. And, you know, I think we've been pretty good. I'm pretty proud of Newfoundland and Labrador. I've heard across the country when I've been on meetings that, masking, some of the public health measures, you know, have been very difficult in some provinces to get public buy-in. And I'm actually very proud of our population because I think they have risen to the challenge and they realize that these things are put in place to protect all of us. And, you know, more particularly, they're put in place to protect the most vulnerable parts of our population, you know, our seniors and people with chronic medical illnesses. So congratulations, Newfoundland and Labrador.
Yeah,
I'm very proud of you.
Yeah, I echo that as well. You know, I've got a sister that lives in Alberta, friends that live all over the country, and they just cannot believe, they say how lucky we are in Newfoundland and Labrador, but it's not quite luck. It's been a lot of hard work on behalf of Dr. Janice Fitzgerald and John Hagee and Premier Andrew Furey since he came in. And of course, Dwight Ball did a great job as well in keeping the pandemic off of our shores. It's like a tsunami waiting to crash on us, but we're holding fast as of right now. In order to, just borrowing a phrase there from Dr. Janice Fitzgerald. One thing that they've all been preaching, of course, for the last several months is the importance of getting your flu shot. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh my goodness, absolutely. I can't say strongly enough how important I believe that is. And, you know, I've always had a flu shot myself. I make sure my entire family has a flu shot. I make it available to my patients. I mean, you know, it's, you know, we still need to remember that, you know, 3,500 odd people die every year from influenza in Canada. And again, you know, often hits our most vulnerable populations. So, you know, it's one way that we can help the healthcare system. It's one way that we can help our vulnerable loved ones is to make sure we do that. And, myself and my colleagues have given about 1,200 flu shots this year. We've done it in drive-thrus. We've gone out to places, people's workplaces to do it. And I always tell people these vaccines are safe. They've been around for many, many, many years. And, you know, we know they work. And you can't get the flu from a flu shot. So all that stuff that you read on Facebook, none of it's true, right? Just get your flu shot. You're helping so many people by doing that.
You just mentioned that the flu kills, is it 3,500 people in Canada per year?
I think so, somewhere in that territory, for sure.
And then when you think about COVID-19 already, there's almost 12,000 people that have died from COVID-19 in the last year. And I mean, with all of the measures that are in place and mask wearing and stuff, for anybody out there that is thinking COVID-19 is just like the flu, it certainly is not.
Absolutely not. No, no. And so that's something that everybody needs to keep in mind. This is a real, real issue. And, you know, I hope that, you know, when the spring comes in the summer, that everybody rolls up their sleeve again and make sure that they get the COVID-19 vaccine. Just so that, you know, for the very reasons I said, you know, do it for your grandfather, do it for your, you know, your grandmother, your aunt, do it for the people who really, you know, they're the ones that are going to be the statistic at the end of this if we don't, you know, keep doing our public health measures and if we don't get vaccinated.
And in the last few days, there's been some worry that we won't get the vaccine fast enough here in Canada. But Prime Minister Trudeau just made an announcement actually saying that most Canadians should be able to have the vaccine by September of 2021. So, you know, a lot of people would like to have it sooner than that. What do you think about that? September 2021, can we hang on that long?
Do you know what? We've held on this long, and I think we're pretty good at this. You know, we're doing okay. We have no choice, really, Carrie. So, you know, I just, if we want to get there, we just all have to kind of put our heads down and say we're going to do this. I mean, you know, I've looked at the data on these vaccines, and I mean, it's really remarkable, the data we're seeing. I mean, you know, the, you know, 90% efficacy rates are actually quite impressive. So, you know, there is an end in sight. You know, we're very fortunate that we've gotten to a point where these vaccines exist. So it's, you know, we can do it. We all have to do it. We have no choice.
We've been talking a lot about, you know, some of the negative aspects of being a doctor, recruitment and burnout and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, there must really be a lot of pride in the type of work that you do. If there's anybody out there listening, maybe they're, you know, a student getting ready to go to university next year or the year after, and they've been toying with the idea of becoming a doctor. Would you recommend it?
Do you know what? I'd never would have looked back. And I grew up in a rural community in Newfoundland and Labrador, and I, you know, there were no physicians in my family. I didn't know what I was getting into, and you know, it was a surprise when I got there. But you know, there's no better job, really. If, you know, family medicine, which is where I am, as I've said to you before, it's a very interesting job, and we're very privileged to be part of people's lives. And at the end of the day, I go home and say, you know, today was a good day because I helped somebody. And so if you can say that, then you've probably had a pretty good day. And there's lots of people who work out there who could say that, not just doctors. So thanks to everybody who helped somebody. If you help somebody once a day, you've probably been okay that day.
Perfect. Yeah, that's what I love about working here at VOCM as well. We definitely make a difference in people's lives every day, whether it be someone calling into Patty Daly for some advice or people listening to you on the air right now with lots of great advice over the last hour or so. Dr. Lynette Powell of the NLMA, you are the new president, of course, and your contract negotiations start on Monday. Are you expecting them to go well? Do you have any sense of where government is at right now, you know, before you get to the table on Monday?
You know, it's a day by day for us. We're going into it with an open mind, and you know, that's, I really don't want to speculate on where things are going to go until we've given government a chance. I do believe that they recognize some of the issues that we're bringing forward are real issues for the province. So I have, I'm just going to put my faith in the process.
Any final thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
No, just make sure you roll up your arm and get your flu shot. That's my one piece of advice for today. And thanks for having me, Carrie.
Dr. Lynette Powell, it has been an absolute pleasure. And we didn't get to talk about flatulence once like we did when we were doing the VOCM checkup at the beginning of COVID-19.
That's right.
And if anybody's wondering, it's not an inside joke. We actually did talk about that on the air. And no, you cannot catch COVID-19 through someone else's flatulence. Thank you very much, Dr. Powell.
Fun time. Take care, Carrie.
Have a great weekend. And good luck on Monday.